So that's the overview of this process. And what we did want to do is just pause for a couple of minutes, 4 or 5 minutes, because some folks may have questions about the process. As Claire alluded to at the beginning, if you could type those in, it'll make it a lot easier. It's really hard to call on people and just straight up out of the blue like this. But we will call on people for the oral comments at the very end in a couple of minutes when I'm done with questions. So maybe I'll pause there. And Claire, if you've got questions about the process, we can field those now.
Yeah, sure. We'll give all attendees a couple of minutes here to be thinking and typing in questions about the process. With these virtual meetings, we do need to allow for a little extra time for people to get to that point. So nothing has come in quite yet, Bill. So we'll just give folks a couple of minutes here to think, process all the information you gave them, and think if there's any follow-up questions they may have. All right, we do have one that came in. Could you let us know an order of the public speakers, maybe in fives, so we can be ready? Absolutely, that'll be the plan. It'll probably be in groups of three, which gives you 6 minutes to prepare, hopefully. I could do it in five as well. Good suggestion, thank you for that. So I guess in preparation, while we're waiting for questions on the process, like we mentioned at the very beginning, there will be a few more slides before we open it up for public comment period. But for those, I'll tell you the first five that are in the queue for questions. Again, this is based on when you registered. So those that registered first are starting, and then we're going to work our way up the list here. So Rocio Lozano-Knowlton, Christopher Voss, Heather Dine, Margaret Webb, and Molly Williams. So those will be our first five speakers. I did go through the list, and not everyone that registered and said they wanted to make a public comment is actually at our meeting today. That something may have come up, or they may be joining later. So I've made note of the ones that aren't here yet. We did get a comment that, Bill, it was very helpful to get that overview of the process, and so you're being thanked for that. Another question here, who is on the panel that makes the final decision about the nomination?
Yeah, so the final decision is for the director of the Office of National Marine Sanctuary, John Harmon. And we in the West Coast Regional staff will make a recommendation to him, but it's his decision.
Great. All right. Looks like we gave enough time, so there's more questions coming in at this point. Will the slides be available for review after this presentation?
Yeah, I think, Lisa, we're planning it to put those on the website, right? Where there's a...
Yes, we'll post them on the five-year review page of the website, nominate.noaa.gov.
And on that page, there's a separate section for the Chumash Heritage nomination.
Yes.
If you haven't seen it yet, in the very last slide, we'll have that web address. But that subsection on that website includes the nomination itself, the recent letter we received from the Northern Chumash Tribal Council, and we'll put this PowerPoint up too.
Great. And we actually, Haven, if you don't mind typing in that address, like getting at the nominate.noaa.gov and putting that into the chat box for all attendees, that they can get that sooner rather than later. All right, another question here. How many National Marine Sanctuaries are in the United States now? And if this area were designated, could you construct offshore wind turbines in the sanctuary?
So there are, geez, I may get this wrong. There are 14 National Marine Sanctuaries and 2 Marine National Monuments. One of the Marine National Monuments is Rose Atoll. It largely overlays National Marine Sanctuary of American Samoa. So in terms of total number of units, that's what, 15 different units, but there are two monuments and 14 marine sanctuaries. A marine sanctuary and wind turbines is a question that's certainly been out there for some time and gets a lot of attention. The ultimate answer is it depends on the regulations that are developed for that marine sanctuary. Every marine sanctuary, in essence, has a customized set of regulations that apply to the issues and threats that that area faces. We don't have wind farms within marine sanctuaries presently. There has been a lot of discussion about potential, you know, possible, maybe one day considerations in the very southwest corner of Monterey Bay Sanctuary, which is very close to area that's been proposed for wind development. There's nothing that inherently prohibits it within the marine sanctuary's regulations, but, and this is, I'm giving you the absolute tip of the iceberg because it's a very complicated issue. There are other federal laws and state laws that govern how wind farm can be developed, and those are more richly described than what would happen in a marine sanctuary. So for a lot of reasons, none has been proposed in a marine sanctuary, none has been denied, but the permitting process would be probably a bit more complex than what it would be outside of a marine sanctuary, which is complex too. Ultimately, the gist of it is that were Chumash Heritage to move forward, that particular issue and many other issues would be part of that designation process assessment.
Great, thank you for that, Bill. We have a question here. Are all the criteria weighted equally, or will there be special considerations to one or another?
No, they're largely considered equally, but I think what's key is that for a site to move forward into the inventory, it needs to meet at least one of the four national significance criteria. If it doesn't meet one of those four, then the management considerations are not relevant. But of all of them together, if you can accept, okay, of those four, one of those at least, ideally several are relevant, then the management considerations are weighted equally and are evaluated together.
Okay, great. Why has this taken 5 years, and what is the timeline moving forward?
So the five-year process has taken 5 years because it's a five-year process. When NOAA set up this nomination process for community groups to nominate them, they chose to set some time frame to, in essence, evaluate the shelf life of a nomination, and 5 years was chosen. It's taken, we're at 4.5 years, 4 years and 8 months or so right now. The process to complete the five-year review is going to be over the next 2 or 3 months, when I and my team on the West Coast are going to be evaluating the information that I identified in the process that identified.
All right, we have a few more questions, and then I put into the chat box last call for questions related to the process. So a question here, what would be the basis for not recommending proceeding with the designation process?
Could you read that in? Not moving forward with the designation process?
Yeah,
that's how it's written. So I'll take it on its face. So the decision to move a site forward for designation is made at a very high level within NOAA. And there are three of the sites that have, many that have been nominated, have been advanced for designation, two by the Obama administration, one by the Trump administration. And there was a lot of considerations that they made. I wasn't a principal in any of those discussions, but the assessment that they made were that those other sites were appropriate, worthy, and ought to be advanced. And up until now, the Chumash Heritage nomination hasn't met those criteria. Some of them are probably a bit political in nature. Some of them may be about the urgency of the resources that need protection. Some may be weighing about what role NOAA and the sanctuary can really provide at this time. So there's not been a decision to never designate Chumash Heritage. It just hasn't risen to that point in the process today.
All right. Who develops the customized set of rules for each sanctuary, and how are they approved?
So that's getting a bit more beyond the five-year review process, but the regulations are developed, as I alluded to, through the designation process, through a very lengthy, collaborative, consultative effort with stakeholders, other agencies, local and state agencies, and federal agencies and tribal organizations, tribal institutions having prominent roles in that. And those are then vetted through a public review process. NOAA writes them, but then they're reviewed by the public. And that includes running an environmental impact statement about the potential impacts, And then sharing those with the public, and the public gets a chance to give us feedback about what they like and don't like about those regulations. They're too hot or too cold, or they go too far, or don't go far enough. And the governor's office for those, the governor himself or herself, for those portions that are within state waters also has a review authority too. So there's multiple levels, and ultimately after that extensive preparation process, a comment process and response to comment process, it's NOAA's decision, the agency's decision, whether or not to take that final step and designate a marine sanctuary, which, as I said, for parts within the state, the governor can object to or ask us to change those.
Yeah. Thank you. For those that maybe didn't join at the beginning of the meeting, I'm just going to go ahead and reintroduce ourselves so that people know who's talking here. So I am Claire Fackler. I'm with the NOAA Office of National Marine Sanctuaries, and I'm an education specialist. And we've got Bill Duros, who is the regional director for the West Coast region of the National Marine Sanctuary System, and Dr. Lisa Wunick, who is the policy coordinator also for the West Coast region of the National Marine Sanctuary System. So that's here, who's here today helping organize the meeting. We do have a few more questions, Bill, and I think we'll be able to move on. This question here is, can boundaries of the proposed area be modified?
Yeah, that's an important question, because the only boundaries we have in essence now are those which the Northern Chumash Tribal Council has proposed. So that's what we start with within the nomination. If NOAA were to advance it to a designation, and if at that time, pretty unlikely, but if at that time we had a strong concern or interest in a bigger or smaller boundary, we would identify that. But the review process always looks at a range of alternatives. And so that, in theory, could be bigger boundaries, one or several alternatives, smaller boundaries. You know, I think for the sanctuaries that are immediately abutting this one, Monterey Bay's review had 5 or 6 alternative boundaries. Channel Islands had 3 or 4 alternative boundaries. And so that's always an inherent part of the process. So these that you see in that map are the starting point, not the end point. It would be one of those factors that gets evaluated through a designation process.
Okay, a question about how much influence politics in Washington have on this process.
Politics in Washington, my view is, are not a factor that we consider. We are, you know, at this point, you know, I and my staff within the West Coast Regional Office evaluating really on a technical basis, is there new information that helps demonstrate greater or lesser responsiveness and relevance to these 11 criteria? So that's what we're evaluating, and we're not involved in any way on any sort of political aspects of this, you know, local, state, national, or anything else.
Thanks for that clarification. In terms of policy, does CEQA apply?
So CEQA itself does not apply through, because we're a federal agency carrying out a federal action. However, there's a parallel process or a sister or a twin process called NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act, which actually came before CEQA, and we are required to complete NEPA. And it's, you know, having done these for 35 years, it's a parallel, similar, not quite identical, but very, very comparable process to CEQA.
Which 4 criteria did you mean when you said one had to be met? Perhaps, are you able to go back to that slide for a second?
I can go back to that slide. These 4 are the national significance criteria. And what it says in essence is that this area is nationally significant, either because of the natural resources or the ecological qualities, or because it contains submerged maritime heritage resources of special, either historical, cultural, or archaeological significance. And I'm just reading the highlights. You can see here, and again, these are all on that website too. There's a lot of detail about what we mean by this. And or the area supports present and potential economic uses that are nationally significant. And then lastly, there's publicly derived benefits for the area that are significant, and they depend on conservation and management of the resources. So these are the four national significance criteria, excuse me, for which a nomination must at least meet one of these four.
Great, that provided a nice review of that. All right, we will take one last question, and then the one or two questions that remain we'll answer on the side. One question here, have you consulted with other tribes?
Not at this point, we have not. The nomination came to us from one of the bands of the Chumash Nation. There are federal guidelines and procedures that we're required to follow for and with tribes that are what are called federally recognized. And the Chumash Nation, the Standing Desert Band of the Chumash, is federally recognized and the only one in the area. We have sent them a letter seeking and an email followed by later a letter to determine if they're interested in government-to-government consultation on this. But they're the only ones we've reached out to. But through this process, we're hoping word spreads to anyone who's interested, whether it's a different tribal group or any other organizations, individuals, citizens. We're open to any feedback or input people have. Again, especially as it relates to these 11 criteria, that's really what we're looking for.
Okay. Well, thanks everyone for your great questions related to the process. We'll go ahead and let Bill do a few more slides, and then we're going to be
opening. I'm not sure there's many more. I mean, some of this Claire's gone over. We've talked about it a little bit already, that everyone's got 3 minutes to speak. There'll be a timer. We decided rather than have you watch a 3 minute countdown clock, which may take the commenter's sole focus, there'll be one that'll count down the last 20 seconds. So that's all. That we're going to count down, so you don't have to concentrate on that. But we do ask that everyone take that amount of time, less if you feel like that's all you need. We've got lots of folks that have signed up, but there is a process. If you haven't signed up, you decide to speak. And Claire may cover that one more time where you raise your hand. You've got Lisa's email address here. If you want to reach out to her immediately to try to help you with anything. And again, just be respectful. There's a lot of different views out there on everything. You know, it's a challenging time in our country. And, you know, we just want to make sure everyone feels as if their comments and views were heard. And you don't want to know that someone later on is complaining about a comment that you made, you know, either tonight or even after the fact. So anyway, we'll get through this. And we just want to extend our appreciation for everyone who participated, you know, Claire for hosting this, you know, you're our technical guru on it. But there's, you know, a lot of folks that are taking time to come out and be part of this tonight. We did struggle with when to host it, you know, in the afternoon, in the evening. So apologies if, you know, it's going to be a late night for those who may speak at the end. But there's a number of sanctuary staff that are here as well. Paul Michelle is the superintendent for Monterey Bay Sanctuary. He's listening in. Mike Murray is the deputy superintendent at Channel Islands. He's here. We've got other staff from the other sanctuaries and my regional team that's here too. So we're really focused on getting people's feedback and input. And I think one other thing I just wanted to flag, and I forget whether you mentioned this, Claire, is we are going to take, what, a brief 5 minute or so bio break around 7:30. And just in case, you know, at least some of us that are participating on this end, they need to scoot away just for a few minutes. But we'll give everyone a heads up before that comes. So this is the slide that'll just stay up at the end. It's got all the information on one side about the written comments and then the oral comments tonight. And that 20 is the countdown clock that you'll see counting down when you hit your last 20 seconds. And so with that, I'm done. And I really appreciate everyone's attention and everyone's participation, sincerely.